after that outline, too, because I feel like I'm going to have to go about 70 miles an hour to finish chapter 12 of Genesis today. It's an extremely interesting chapter. It deals with God's covenant with Abraham. Some tremendous things here. I think primarily we're going to see that Abraham, though everybody says he's such a wonderful person of faith, was really quite a turkey. And this chapter, I think, is going to bring God's grace into a greater dimension possibly than you have seen before. This passage is used in the New Testament in Romans chapter 4 as the pivotal point of justification by faith. So it becomes extremely important, not only for a covenant in the Old Testament with Israel, but for God's universal covenant with man beginning back in Genesis 3:15. I hope you do have an outline because there's going to be a lot of word studies here, a lot of parallel passages. If you don't get that, I hope you'll send for it this week. It'll really be a blessing to you. Now let's look, if we could, at the beginning of this chapter 12, where it says, "Now the Lord said to Abram." Now the Hebrew there, the word is not "now," it's "and." And your Bible might say, "had said." For one of the big problems right off the bat here is, when did verses 1, 2, and 3 occur? Did it occur in Ur of the Chaldees, or did it occur in Haran? And it is really hard to know. The translations that say "now" and "had said" try to put verses 1 through 3 back in Ur. Now, the reason for that is that it seems to imply in Genesis chapter 15:7, Nehemiah chapter 9:7, and Acts chapter 7, verse 2, that God first spoke to Abram in Ur of the Chaldees. And it's a little Hebrew phrase trying to get that back. But really, it should be "and the Lord said." Notice the name for Lord there. It's in all caps. It's the word Yahweh. I do not think that the names Elohim and Yahweh reflect two different authors of the Pentateuch. But they are used in specific ways by Moses to identify God as creator or as the covenant God. And here we have the covenant God speaking to Abraham. I want you to notice God's election here. It wasn't because of Abraham's goodness or Abraham's faith or Abraham's anything. It's because God chose. Now, this covenant is conditional. It's conditional on Abraham's response. And as we'll see in a minute, Abraham did not fully respond to what God told him to, and yet God was faithful anyway. So this covenant is conditional on man's part, unconditional on God's part, because it links up with Genesis 3:15, the promise of the Messiah to all nations. Notice, if you would, where it says, "and go forth from your country." A little more literal Hebrew is, "go for yourself." And you thought that was a new commercial. No, it's as old as Hebrew. "Go for it." It's right here. "Go for your country." Now, what country is he talking about? Could he be talking about Ur of the Chaldees or Haran? Then in verse 4, it seems to apply this is took place in Haran. But really, I think you have to look back at Genesis chapter 11. Now, something is happening here that's not quite understood completely. We can't answer all the question about these Bible passages. In 11:26, Terah has three sons, and Abraham is mentioned first. But whether that makes him the oldest or not, we just don't know. But these three sons lived in Ur of the Chaldees. But Haran, his son, died in Ur of the Chaldees, and we learn from chapter 11, verse 21, that Terah took his family and went to Haran, the city, not the son, and was planning to go to the land of Canaan. Now, whether God spoke to Abraham in Ur and that influenced what Terah was going to do, we don't know. Notice where it says, "from your relatives and from your father's house." Now, Abraham did not fulfill this requirement, apparently. For his father, he came with his father all the way to Haran and stayed with him there a long time. Matter of fact, Acts chapter 7, verse 4 says that his father died before he left, and therefore he did not leave his family as God told him to, but stayed many, many years there until his father died. But there's a real problem with that dating. Let me go back through and see if I can show you the dating problem. Now, in Acts chapter 7, verse 4, it says Terah died and then Abraham left. But if you'll just turn a page back over to Genesis chapter 11, verse 26, you'll see it says, "And Terah was 70 years old and became father of Abraham, Nahor, and Haran." And then if you'll look at chapter 12, verse 4, you'll see that Abraham was 75 years old when he left Haran. Now, if you add that together, you get 145 years. Now, in chapter 11, verse 32, the Samaritan Pentateuch says that instead of 205 years, which the Masoretic text and probably your translation has in verse 32 as age for Terah when he died, they have 145, which shows they saw the problem and tried to reconcile it. I really think that what happened is that chapter 11, verse 26, where it says that Terah was 70 years old before he had children, and Abraham is mentioned first, is not so much that Abraham was the oldest son, but that he was first in preeminence. And so there may be many years before Abraham was born after the other children. But we really can't answer that question of was Terah alive when Abraham left. Now, beginning in the next part of verse 1, it says, to a land that I will show you. Many people say, boy, Abraham had great faith. He had to leave his relatives. Well, he didn't. He just left part of them there. Half of them or more followed him to where he was going. And then it says, I'll show you a land. Well, I admit it's great faith on Abraham's part to believe God amidst all the polytheism of his day. But, you know, it's not too tough when God speaks to you out of nowhere and says, I want you to do this for somebody to listen. You know, it's kind of like Paul being knocked down by light on the road to Damascus and Jesus talking to him. Now, I admit that Paul had faith, but when Jesus talks to you out of a bright light, it tends to take away from how great a faith you have. So, I think Abraham here responded to a God that spoke to him. And I still think he had faith, but not as much as we often put on him because he didn't even fulfill all the conditions. Now, notice if you would, it says in verse 2, and I will make you a great nation. Now, the word for nation there is a word that implies that God is going to give him a land. Now, he doesn't know what land yet. But isn't it ironical that Terah, his daddy, was already going to the land of Canaan before God speaks to Abram later on in chapter, I believe, 14, where he says, this land will be yours. Now, notice it says, I will bless you. Notice the number of times through here, God says, I will, I will, I will, I will. So here is the unconditional covenant of God, but it's based on man's response. Notice what it says, look at the last part of verse 2, and so you shall be a blessing. Now, that's a problem translation. This is a Hebrew imperative, and it's stuck right in the middle of a list of imperfects. It should be translated, and so be a blessing. Again, another condition. Abraham was to recognize his special place in God's dealing and to actively take part in being a blessing to others. Notice in verse 3 where it says, and I will bless those who bless you, and the one who curses you I will curse. Now, you can't tell in English translation, but there are two Hebrew words for curse. The first one is a word that means man speaking evil of other men. The second word for curse speaks of God's judicial curse. Now, what it means is this. As God had chosen Abraham out of all the people of the world to choose the world, to be turned off to Abraham is to cut yourself off from God. And that's what the curse involves. Notice, if you will, the next little phrase, the last part of verse 3, where it says, in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. And that's extremely important because chapter 11 is the Tower of Babel, where God had split all the families of the earth with different languages. And now here's the promise again for a worldwide redemption through the Messiah. Now there's a Hebrew grammatical point here I need to make. I hope you'll be patient with me. Now this is a niphal verbal stem. It means it has to be translated passive. All the families of the earth will be blessed. This very same form is used in chapter 18, verse 18, chapter 28, verse 14, Acts chapter 3, verse 25, and Galatians chapter 3, verse 8. But there's another translation here that uses the hithael stem, and that is 22:18 and 26:4. I think what we have here is, and that's of course a middle tense, which means the nations will bless themselves. Here we have the promise that God is going to redeem all men through the Messiah. Remember, God chose Abraham not because Abraham was so good or because he loved the Jews more than others, but God chose Abraham to choose a nation of priests that all the world might come to know him. And so God chose a nation of those who should tell all the rest of the nations about himself. Also, when it says the families of the earth will bless themselves through Abraham, it shows that we must respond to the promises of Abraham before we can be a part. Now, the New Testament, especially Romans chapter 4, picks up on this Abraham that he believed God, and it was counted to him as righteousness. Now, I need to show you something here. Paul picks up in Romans chapter 4 on God's promise to Abraham to make him, this sevenfold promise, says the rabbis, if he'll listen and follow him. Now, the book of James picks up on when Abraham offers Isaac way down in his life many years. Paul says that faith alone is what makes man right with God, and James says faith and works. This is not a contradiction. It's two part of a man's life. If we truly respond to God by faith, our life should show it. And therefore, I think the contradiction is eliminated when you see the two areas of Abraham's life. I want to make a special offer this one time on the radio, if I could. A few months ago, I preached a sermon on what is faith. I think it's the best sermon the Lord has ever given to me. And I want to make it available to you in conjunction with this passage on faith. It's so important that we understand what biblical faith is, And I think this message will really be a blessing to you. And open your eyes to biblical faith, Old Testament, New. If you'll just write me at the Post Office Box 2711, Lubbock, Texas, 79408, and just say, please send the tape on faith. I'll mail it to you free and postpaid. Now, notice if you would, let's move in, if we could, to verse 4. So Abram went forth as the Lord had spoken to him, and Lot went with him. Now, when it says Lot went with him, Josephus, a Jewish historian in the time of Jesus, says that Abraham adopted Lot because he didn't have any children, and he was trying to help God fulfill his promise. Well, that is a rabbinical interpretation, but that fits Abraham's lifestyle perfect, because he did the same thing with Keturah and tried to help God fulfill the promise of an heir. Now, whether it's exegetical or not, I don't know. It is a rabbinical tradition. Now, Abraham was 75 years when he departed from Haran. Now, it's very important we see the word Haran is used in two different ways. It is one of the sons of Terah, mentioned in chapter 11, verse 26. But he dies in Ur of the Chaldees. Now, Haran here is a city in the northern part of the Fertile Crescent, northeast of the city of Ur. Ur and Haran both are centers of the worship of the moon god Zin. Matter of fact, Terah's two other children seem to reflect in their name the worship and name of the moon god. Now, verse 5. And Abram and Sarai, his wife. The word Abram means exalted father or one who exalts his father. The word Sarai means queen. His wife and Lot, his nephew, and all their possessions which they had accumulated and the persons which they had acquired. Now, a little more literal Hebrew for that word acquired is the word made. The Kabbalah, which is mystical Judaism, says that Abraham made real people by magical incantations and took them with him to show the power of God. Oh, croak. The rabbis say that what we have here is proselytes that attached themselves to Abraham because he preached about a monotheistic God. Also, the Targum say this. Well, the context should certainly say to us in history that what we're talking about here is slaves or servants that Abraham purchased in Haran. Now, notice that God chose a rich man. There's nothing wrong with riches. God chose a man that was very rich to be the progenitor of the chosen people. Okay? Now, Terah, we know from Joshua chapter 24, verse 2, was a polytheist. Now, in Genesis 31:53, it says he knew Yahweh, but worshipped other gods. So we don't know if Abraham was a polytheist back in Mesopotamia or not. Josephus says that he had to leave Ur of the Chaldees because he preached monotheism and the people revolted. Well, that's ridiculous. Notice also where it mentions here in verse 6, and Abraham passed through the land as far as the site of Shechem. Now, Shechem is a city in the central part of the Promised Land between Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim. We see that in Deuteronomy chapter 11, verses 29 and 30, where that is the Mount of Blessing and Cursing when Joshua entered the land, a very famous and important site. Notice he came to the Oak of Morah. Now, Morah is a word for teacher. We find in the early part of the Bible, many of these oaks or trees became very special places to the Semitic people. A tree was an unusual thing in the desert area, and it kind of implied there was water there, and it, you know, and so it became a very holy kind of thing. And all through the old part of the Old Testament, we see people worshiping at trees or God appearing to people at trees or altars set up under trees and that kind of thing. The last little phrase of verse 6, now the Canaanite was in the land. Many think that this is an anachronism written later. Even a Jewish exegete like the Spanish exegete Ibn Ezra says this is a doubtful phrase of Moses. I don't deny there are parts of the Pentateuch that may have been added by a later editor or redactor, but the great body and bulk of information is Mosaic. I personally think we don't have a redactor here, but what we have, you have to remember the context. Remember last week in Genesis chapter 9, we had Ham's son, the youngest son, Cana? Well, I think it simply implies that, number one, the land that God was to give Abraham and his descendants was a land that was already possessed by the descendants of Canaan. And therefore, I think we see how it fits together in the book of Genesis. Verse 7, and the Lord appeared to Abram. This is the first time we have a physical appearance of the Lord. And probably because of the later appearances, this is the angel of the Lord appearing in human form to Abram. And said to him, to your descendants I will give this land. This is a very big verse because of Israel's hope in the promised land. We know today as Israel and the surrounding area of Judah and Samaria. But I want you to notice something else. Paul takes this very phrase and makes the singular seed, which is the Hebrew background to the word descendants, and says it refers to the Messiah. So So God's promise here is a universal promise to the Gentiles through the Messiah, as well as a narrow promise to the nation of Israel. We must remember that God chose Abraham to choose the world. He didn't love Abraham special. Abraham wasn't a super person. Abraham was a turkey. And we're going to see that not only in his partial fulfillment of the conditional promises that God made, but in verse 10 and following, he really plays the fool. And so here we have clearly God's grace seen and God's election, not the greatness of Abraham. Now, notice it continues in verse 8 to say that he pitched his tent between Bethel and Ai. Now, Bethel is a word that means the house of God. But from Genesis 28:19, we learn that it was called Luz until the day of Jacob. So Moses is writing back a later name for an earlier place. The town Ai, of course, is a place where the army of Israel was defeated in the days of Joshua. It is known as a heap of stones or a ruin, which is there even to this day. Verse 9. And Abraham journeyed on, continuing toward the Negev. Now the word journeyed on is literally in Hebrew, pulled up tent pegs. And the word Negev means the south. I need to stop for a moment and let you listen to Phil Crenshaw with some opportunities for you.
You are listening to the International Sunday School Lesson Incorporated with Pastor Teacher Bob Utley. We hope you are enjoying the lesson today, and Bob will return in just a minute. Would you like to receive a free weekly outline of these Sunday School lessons? It is yours without charge when you write International Sunday School Lesson Incorporated, Post Office Box 2711, Lubbock, Texas 79408. This is a verse-by-verse outline written by Bob to help you understand the historical background of the text. Additional notes will assist you in understanding difficult Bible words and their origin. Why not write us now for this free weekly outline at this address, International Sunday School Lesson Incorporated, Post Office Box 2711, Lubbock, L-U-B-B-O-C-K, Lubbock, Texas 79408. This ministry is supported entirely by your gifts and free will offerings. The outreach of this broadcast is growing and is the result of many faithful listeners who are praying and supporting this work. Would you join us as a prayer partner and contributing supporter? For those who contribute to this ministry during the month of September, we will send you a 90-minute cassette tape on chapters 7 and 8 of our verse-by-verse Bible study on the book of the Revelation. Or, if you would prefer, a cassette on the subject of divorce. We are praying that these tapes will be a blessing to your life. Would you tell a friend about this exegetical Bible study which follows the Sunday school lessons of most churches? Remember our address, International Sunday School Lesson Incorporated, Post Office Box 2711, Lubbock, Texas, 79408. Now, once again, here's Bob.
Thank you, Phil. And I will make this special offer just this week now to those of you who are listening this time on this tape on What Is Faith. I think you'll really enjoy that. It's a 90-minute cassette on What Is Biblical Faith. Faith is such an important word in the New Testament that it's crucial that we understand it not from what people have told us, but what the Bible itself says. So write me, and I'll be happy to send you that free tape and put you on the weekly outline. Now, verse 10. I want to tell you one thing about the Bible is it shows man warts and all. And I want to tell you, Abraham has some warts, and we're going to see them right here. Now, there was a famine in the land. Notice the test of faith that came almost immediately in Abraham's life. God had promised him the land, but suddenly a famine arose, literally an empty stomach. Now, Abraham had to go down to Egypt. And so God, I think, was testing his faith to see if Abraham really would trust him and believe him. Now, it says in verse 11 that Sarah, his wife, was a beautiful woman, though she was 65. Take heart, all you ladies over 60. And so Pharaoh wanted to marry her, he thought. So he said, look, they'll kill me and to marry you. And matter of fact, we have some archaeological evidence. That's exactly what one Pharaoh did. Sent a whole army to capture a woman he wanted and kill her husband. Yucko. Anyway, so he made her say he was his sister. And that way thought he'd protect himself. Now, that doesn't sound too bad, except the fact that God had just promised him to make him a great nation and to give him many, many descendants. And now here's Abraham saying, oh, I got to protect myself. I got to lie about who I am so I can fulfill God's promises. He didn't even trust God to protect him and to give him descendants. So I don't think Abraham's such a hot dog of faith. I think he's just like us. He's a man with feet of clay. But it helps me to know that Abraham's a turkey because that knows that God can use me and deal with me. And it's not Abraham's great faith, but his willingness to listen and respond to God. Now, when he said, tell them you're my half-sister, that's really the truth. He was She was his half-sister. Look at Genesis 20:12. Now, this idea about being a sister sounds very strange to us. But from the Nuzi tablets, we have found this was a pretty common occurrence in Hurrian culture, which is, of course, the culture that Abraham and Sarai came from. Men would raise their wives up to the level of sister and give them special dignity in the relationship. Now, Abraham did it for a different motive, but it was a common thing in the culture of that day. Matter of fact, this thing is unbelievable, and it's repeated in chapter 20. Abraham pulls the very same noise in chapter 20 with Abimelech, and then his son does the very same thing in Genesis 26. So this is something repeated several times in the Bible. Look at verse 14. And it came about when Abram came into Egypt. Notice the singular there, Abram came to Egypt. A rabbinical exegete named Rashi says that because of the singular here, that means that Abraham hid his wife in a chest. And he had to pay taxes when he crossed the border, so he had to open the chest, and the Egyptians saw his wife. Golly! Well, whatever. Notice verse 15, and Pharaoh, now let me stop for a minute. The word Pharaoh is used like we use the word king or ruler. But the etymology of that word is from the word son, S-U-N. For in Egypt, the Pharaoh is considered to be the son, S-O-N, of the sun god. And that's where the name comes from. Now, notice it says that he gave him in verse 16. That's not good Hebrew. A little more literal Hebrew is, and he had. So we don't think that Pharaoh gave him all these things, because camels are certainly not a part of the regular animal stock of Egypt. But that Abraham had these, and it seems like Pharaoh added to them. See, Abraham became the position of the brother of the bride, and this probably was a diary of some kind that Pharaoh was given for the marriage of his supposedly sister. Verse 17, but the Lord struck Pharaoh and his house with a great plague because of Sarah. Now this plague, what it was, we don't know, but apparently it was something that protected Sarah from Pharaoh. In Genesis 20:18, we find that the plague that came upon Elimelech for the same cause was a closing of the womb of all his wives. Exactly what happened here, we don't know. Notice your translation in verse 17 says, because of Sarah. Now, a little more literally, it says, by the word of Sarah. Rashi again says, Sarah ordered the angels to put it on Pharaoh. Well, I don't know, but something happened, and Pharaoh was really upset. Now, check this out. In verse 18 through 20, we have Pharaoh, who does not know God, who is a pagan as far as knowledge of the Creator God, is scolding the chosen seed of God, the line of Shem, because of lying and dishonesty, and then kicks them out of Egypt. In verse 20, my translation has escorted him away. And that's what the rabbis say, too. But the Hebrew word is sent him away. Now, here we have the progenitor of the Israeli people being scolded by Pharaoh and sent out of the country. Well, that's always been an embarrassment to the Jews. But it's just a way of showing that Abraham, he did have faith. He was a great fella, but he was a fella. He was a sinful person, and he wasn't the great, great person we make him out to be. You know what we do? We take the Bible, we take people who are just people, and we put them on a pedestal and try to make them super people. The Bible knows nothing of super people, just people who've been touched by a super God. And so this chapter, though it speaks of the universalness of God's love, shows the feet of clay of Abraham. And I think we really need to see that. But let's go back through here quickly, because there's some important points we need to pick up on again. Number one, notice that this tremendous chapter on the covenant with Abraham begins with God's election. God chooses Abraham, not because of who Abraham is or what Abraham has done or how great Abraham is. This whole chapter says Abraham is a turkey. It's God's grace that comes. God always takes the initiative. And friends, I think you can know for sure that just because you're not the perfect person, God still loves you and has a plan for your life and can use you. I've heard people say quite often, God can't use anything but a clean vessel. Well, God don't have no clean vessels. All he got's us, and none of us are clean. We're all like Abraham. We have feet of clay. Secondly, I want you to notice this promise that the Jews make so much out of, about we're the favored people, God chose us, we're special people. Now, I agree they are. But Old Testament election is for service, not for salvation, as is aptly seen in the use of Cyrus and in the use of the Babylonians, Nebuchadnezzar, and on to punish God's people later. This covenant is as wide as the world, which is so significant coming after the Tower of Babel. God is going to bless all the families through Abraham. God chose Abraham to choose a nation, to choose all nations. And I don't think the Jews are special people in God's love. They're simply instruments of God in winning of the world to himself. I still think God is faithful to his promises to Israel, but I don't think Israel is especially loved. Notice also, we have here the fact that God tested Abraham. I want to tell you, a test will come in your life. It is not if, it is simply when. And it seems to say it will come in an area of priority. Here it came right after a promise that God made about giving Abraham the land. God tests Abraham later by offering his son Isaac. Now, both of these tests are picked up by biblical authors in the New Testament. Paul picks up on God's initial belief, Abraham's initial belief in God and left Ur of the Chaldees and followed God. James picks up on the test of faith later in offering Isaac. Friends, God does test us. Untested faith, though sincere, cannot be sure. And so here we have Abraham being tested. And notice, Abraham fails the test. But God is faithful. Don't you see the beauty of God's grace? Now, also notice here the very fact that Israel is scolded by a pagan ruler ought to tell us that we can't be so dogmatic about Israel being all that she claims to be. And the special people. Now, I personally support many evangelical Jewish organizations, and I am committed to the nation of Israel, but I am not committed to a special people or to God's special love for one group. This covenant speaks of God's universal covenant, beginning in Genesis 15, touching base down here in Genesis 12, being repeated for every patriarch, and coming to ultimate fulfillment in the Messiah, who in Galatians chapter 3, Paul says, we are the spiritual seed of Abraham, that we are children of Abraham by faith, and therefore all who believe in God by faith are spiritual Israel. Well, I've enjoyed very much being with you. I hope you enjoy these little rabbinical quotes I put in here. I don't think they're exegetical, but they are interesting to see how Jews interpret their own scriptures. And sometimes they add a thought to us that is very helpful in seeing into the Jewish mind. I hope you'll continue to read the parallel accounts of the covenant with God, with the patriarchs, that continue through the book of Genesis. As you know, the book of Genesis is a book of beginnings. This is the third beginning for mankind. God tried to work with all men in Adam and failed. God tried to work with all men in Noah and failed. And then he chose the Jews. Well, God bless you and keep you, and I'll see you next week.